The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor-rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials. Order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com. Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. Keen observers will notice that it's a different person speaking first, and there's a good reason for that, because Dom's on his travels. I'm Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, as always joined by, in screen order, Tom Malogny in the top right from State of Charge, Kyle Connor from the Out of Spec Network, Out of Spec Studios, I should say, on his travels again, obviously, and also on his travels is our normal host, Dom, hence why we have a different introduction. But let's get straight into it. Dom, where are you? And what's going on?
I am in Abu Dhabi in the United Arab Emirates, and I'm here for the DriftX conference, land, sea, and air, or air, land, and sea, I guess. So I moderated a panel. They flew me all over here for basically for that, but I got an interview in that we'll have, I believe, next week, midweek, with Archer Aviation. Usually we focus on ground vehicles here, but I'm really interested in eVTOL space. They're really interesting vehicles, and it's battery operated, and I find them really interesting. Anyway, so that's a quick little interview that we'll share with you all next week.
Can you pick up your laptop and show us outside or see what's going on?
Sure. So just outside of where I am right now, there is a hangar, a small hangar, and there on the pad over here is one drone. So this, if I get myself out of the way, if you can see that out there, that's made by a company called Ehang, and they're out of China, of course, and they're actually flying, humans in drones in Shenzhen in China. Shenzhen is very forward-looking, and, they've cut through a lot of red tape to help, really foster this technology for use, and they've really begun flying. We had one incident yesterday. We had an unmanned drone fly up, a Korean company, and it went up. It was the first demonstration of the day, and it crashed in the water. Luckily, it was nobody aboard. It was, yeah.
That's never good. Normally, EV events that we go to and are normally based around electric vehicles, two wheels, four wheels, and everything that drives. So this is more focused, it's made me more evenly split between air and sea. So is this a little bit more kind of innovation-y, concept-y stuff that could be coming around the corner, or is there stuff that you're seeing that is being deployed right now, like marine stuff that's out there and eVTOL stuff that's not far away from being properly launched?
Right, there's a lot of it's not really too balanced. There's a lot more eVTOL or drone technology here, really, than automobile technology. There are some automobiles here, not very many. There's people from automobile companies. I believe the Faraday Future had a representative here. They didn't have a display or a car here. Outside, there was the local Audi distributor had a couple of vehicles out there, but it's really focused on mostly air. There's a few autonomous or interesting sea applications for electric drivetrains. Even electric seaplane kind of thing, there's all kinds of, it's really hard to explain, actually. There's so much to, yeah. I've did a walkthrough video. I'll try to put that up next week as well, of the whole sort of show. It's not huge. It's their first year doing it, and they threw it together in, I think, like 3 months. So I believe if it continues, next year will be a lot bigger, because it's a really, expanding space.
Excellent. All right. Well, you'll be here chipping in as always, and I'll be maybe doing a bit more of the hosting like you normally do. So I don't know how good Kyle's Wi-Fi is today, but you're on your travels. I want to just check in with you because last we heard you were renting out or lending out your Cybertruck for other journalists to drive. How's it gone? Is your Cybertruck still in one piece, Kyle, if you have a Wi-Fi connection? How's it gone? Right. It is a little patchy. Maybe Carl will need to tether through his phone, or he'll maybe go audio only.
And his mic is muted.
And is muted as well, I can see. But Tom, talking Cybertrucks, Tom, you've had a Cybertruck all week. You haven't bought one though, right? What's the deal?
Right. So, you know, I told you guys earlier that I had the opportunity to get one very early on. That wasn't my reservation. I had a friend who reserved one immediately when it became available. He said he didn't want it. And he said, Tom, you can have it if you want it. I know I have to buy it. I have to insure it for at least a year. And he said, I'll do all that for you. I trust you. You're good. You just pay for everything. And then after a year, we'll transfer it. But I punted on it because I really wanted to drive it. And, you know, honestly, some of the early reviews and stuff, I was a little concerned. So I said, you know, now I have my reservation. It's still out there. I don't know when I'm going to get called. But I need to know if I'm going to really consider this thing or not, because it does look cool. Let's face it. So I rented one. There's one on Toro here in New Jersey. There's actually like six of them here in New Jersey on Toro already. So if anybody wants to rent a Cybertruck, they're out there. I'm sure they're in other states too. So I rented one for almost 4 days and drove about, close to 700 miles. I did a range test for Inside EVs, 70-mile-an-hour highway range test. That video is going to drop today on Inside EVs. It went 302 miles. I'm going to spoil the end result. And I didn't drain the battery completely like Kyle does. I don't have a backup truck on a generator follow me now. Yeah, I could have someone drive me in my Lightning, but it wasn't a good day to do that. And when I'm driving on the turnpike, if I went past this charging station, then I could not have made it. Like the next supercharger would have been like 18 miles. So I drove it 3 miles after it said zero. I think Kyle got 8 or 9 miles past zero, maybe even more. He'll tell us later. And 302 miles, which is fantastic. But this was a dual motor. Not the tri-motor Cyber Beast that Kyle has. And it didn't have the wheel covers on it. You could see it in my garage if you're watching on YouTube now. So I did some charge recordings. I did range tests. And then I did a side-by-side detailed comparison with 14 different categories comparing it to my Lightning. That video is going to come up next week on State of Charge. So yeah, I had a lot of fun with it. Power-wise, exactly the same as the Lightning. And Motor Trend recently did some road tests with it, and the 0 to 60 time and the quarter mile time was exactly the same as they got with their extended range Lightning Lariat when they did their testing. So we can't really go by the manufacturer's data. I like when independent sources do it, and they had it dead even, and I would say that that's probably correct because it feels exactly like my Lightning. Lightning feels more torquey. And it has more torque. It's got 775 pound-feet of torque. The Lightning, the Cybertruck has 525 pound-feet of torque. So it's got like 250 pound-feet of torque more. Cybertruck has, I think, 13 more horsepower or 23 more horsepower, something like that. But, you know, just straight line acceleration, I would call it a dead heat. But when it comes to handling, there's no comparison. I mean, the Cybertruck handles so much better than the Lightning.
Really?
It's like a luxury vehicle. I know we talk about that on Battery Bargains. It's very soft and plush. You take turns. It's kind of a little floppy. You know, it's not meant to be driven spiritedly. You know, it's meant to work and to be comfortable on long drives, which it is. It does that great. But the Cybertruck destroys it with, like, if you want a spirited driving experience. The steer-by-wire surprised me. I really liked it. I thought I was going to be kind of neutral about it. I thought it felt really good. I think Tesla did a good job so far with it. And I bet you they're going to fine tune it a little bit more. I was happy with that. The overall handling was great. The balance, even with these giant 35-inch all-terrain tires, it did really well. You know, some of the negatives, I would say, The road noise, it's a lot louder, but some of that's attributed to the tires. Although when I had my Lightning with the KO2s, which are pretty aggressive treads, it's still way quieter than the Cybertruck. There was some squeaks and some rattles. The interior panels, like the leatherette panels, you could see like all lumps in them, I think, where it's glued or attached to the door. Like it's so much fun to drive, and it's such a cool vehicle, but there's no way that thing should be $100,000, in my opinion, as far as, you know, what you get for it. But
yeah,
I tell you, I'm sure Kyle has the same experience, and he's talked about it. I got mobbed everywhere I went. It was almost unsafe. Driving it on the turnpike when I did my range test, people were hanging out the window, steering with their cell phones like this, and like getting close to me and everything. It was actually dangerous. Now, I know that's going to go away once these things are out there. That's going to fade away once you see them. Right now, I'm sure everybody that saw them was their first Cybertruck. But it seemed like greater than 50% of the vehicles at least look at you. You know, like what the hell is that? You know, so... Brandon said it's a $50,000 truck selling for $100,000. I said in one of my videos, I forget which one, that I think it's a $70,000 truck selling for $100,000. I think that's, you know, 70 grand. It's not a terrible deal. But yeah, I mean, you know, and that those prices are going to come down eventually, because if it's at this high rate for long, after the initial rush goes, the demand's going to go down, and Tesla, like they always do, they adjust their prices according to demand. So if you really want a Cybertruck, but you really can't afford it, just wait, because the price is going to come down for sure. But it's a lot of fun to drive. I mean, I had a lot of fun with it. It's a blast to drive, but you know, I don't think I'm ready yet to trade it in for the Lightning, honest with you.
But let's ask Kyle if that jives with his experiences. Obviously, Kyle, yours is a cyber beast, is that right? So yours tri-motor. But does all of that sound what you would agree or disagree with from Tom? Particularly the attention. Are you still getting loads of attention from driving it?
I have the truck out in LA right now. So I think after, maybe even during the last show, I can't remember, but I was either driving it out or I was out here. But like, as I continued towards LA, the attention got less and less. They're here now. You see 3-5 a day, something like that. People are starting to get used to them. But even then, it still gets quite a bit of attention. But like where Tom is, especially on the East Coast, it's pretty much impossible to drive this car safely, just because everyone around you is just like, oh my God, crazy. And it gets pretty dangerous. So yeah, I agree with most of Tom's comments. The 302 miles makes a lot of sense to me. That dual motor should be more efficient than the tri-motor. We got a little bit more in the tri-motor, but we had the wheel covers and we were at higher elevation, so there's less air density. So the numbers seem pretty reasonable. I think Cybertruck's a 300 mile range truck on the highway. We pretty much know that. At this point, my initial test was pretty poor on it. I don't know why it was poorly. I heard that truck needed a new front motor. Maybe there was a mechanical issue with the truck that I originally tested. But both mine and Tom's were in the ballpark, which is typical. Dual and tri-motor, I think minuscule difference, but definitely some. And pretty much agree with you there, Tom.
I finished up only using 120 kilowatt hour. So you squeezed 124. So if you're talking about thinking the dual motor should go a little bit further, now I drove it 3 miles after it said 0 miles and zero range. But let's say I could have gotten 123. Maybe I couldn't have gotten 124 like you did. Every car is slightly different. All the conditions are slightly different. That, and I averaged 2.5 miles per kilowatt hour. So, you know, we're still looking at another 7.5 miles. So, you know, I probably, if I drove this like you did until it stopped, I think I would have ended with 310. So that's right there with your experience.
Yeah, and on my truck, we got 123 kilowatt hours out of it. The first truck, we did 124.
Oh, okay. So yeah, so I mean, I ended with 120. Although I was on 120 for a while, I think it was just about ready to tick to 131 because I was on 120 for like over 2 miles. So, you know, I think I was really close to 121. But in any event, it could have gone further. I wasn't in reduced power mode, but I was on the New Jersey Turnpike and there was a supercharger right on one of the rest stops. If I would have passed it, that's it. I'm running out because it was more than 10 miles to the next exit.
You're muted, but what have you got in the background there? What's flying high?
That is one of the Ehang drones. So Ehang is a manufacturer, and they sell to different companies. So it's really branded by a different company, but it's the, you know, the Ehang thing. And just a demonstration for his Royal Highness. And yeah, I'm actually locked in this, not locked in this room, but I'm confined to this room until he leaves the area because of the security. But yeah, there's, you know, a few gentlemen here behind us in the local clothes. Yeah, and so we're just watching this man drone take off and fly around and do a few different maneuvers, I guess.
All right, we're going to get to Tesla Model 3 performance. Tesla fans, fear not. We will get to that on today's podcast and have a discussion about that. And next, we'll talk about Mercedes and the G-Wagon. We'll kick off with that. But before we do, just get into that, because we've been talking Cybertruck. So I was going to bring this up later, but let's roll it all in now. Kyle, you put a video out this week about your Cybertruck, which I thought was really interesting, not only because of your stream of consciousness, 15 minutes on the balcony of a hotel. Wasn't a highly produced one. This was just you airing your thoughts. But I thought what was interesting was the comments section. You certainly engaged people's brains on that. When you were talking about how over-the-air updates has meant that EV makers can effectively deliver a vehicle before it's finished, and you were having that discussion around it, and you can go watch that video, anyone listening or watching right now. But maybe if you could just give us the 30-second highlights reel, Kyle, of what you concluded in that video in terms of your Cybertruck being delivered effectively, not half-baked, but not as baked as you really wanted it to be. And that sort of promise of a lot of jam tomorrow of, well, if you just keep waiting, we'll make it as we promised.
Yeah, you're totally right. I mean, there's with the ability to over-the-air update to every module on the vehicle, it means as long as the hardware is there, the software teams can figure their stuff out later. And we've seen two completely different approaches to utilizing over-the-air updates. On one hand, you have the German approach, which I was just doing Porsche Macan EV, which we can actually talk about in this episode because the embargo is now lifted. But talking to the engineers on that car, they delayed it, they waited, they dialed in the software, they made sure the car was ready to ship perfectly with no glitches, with full functionality, and they delayed start of production on that car because of this. On the other hand, the Cybertruck was delivered without autopilot, without locking differentials, without the final charging functionality active in the vehicle, and the list goes on and on and on. So I think that those are two extremes that on one hand held up the delivery of a vehicle that may have cost the company a lot of money, both for Q6 e-tron and Macan. But then on the other hand, Tesla is delivering a vehicle to their super fans that may not complain as much by not having functions in the vehicle on day one. So the video that I did was, at what point do you ship a vehicle? When is a vehicle considered saleable? And the final conclusion that I came to for me personally is, if the vehicle is demonstrated to have a capability or a function in the advertising materials that led someone to purchase that vehicle, it needs to be in there shipped on day one. That doesn't mean it needs to be completely final calibration. The benefit of over the air means that you can improve things in certain areas and open up windows, open up maybe a little bit of charging curve, open up a little bit of performance and dial in the vehicle. But major functions, differential lockers, autopilot come to mind. Those need to be in the vehicle on day one. Now, I bought the Cybertruck knowing it didn't have those. I bought it for content. However, I think a lot of people out there may be purchasing them and not realizing the limitations just based off of the photos and screenshots and complaining I'm seeing in some of the groups. Now, the majority of Cybertruck owners are in the know. They're hardcore Tesla fanboys. They aren't going to complain. And I think Tesla knew that, and I still don't think it's right to sell a full-price vehicle or even a higher-priced vehicle with less functionality initially. But I did it because I needed to make content with it, so they got me.
I thought that you are, you know, you're always very positive. Generally, as a person, you're a very positive person. Things annoy you, yeah, like charging that's broken and stuff like that. But generally, you know, you don't go after easy clicks by being just negative and stuff like that. But it was as irritated as I've seen you in a really long time, in that it feels like you maybe this has been bubbling up for a little bit. And you were very fair and you were very balanced on that video, by the way. You gave both sides of it very, very well, explained it very well. But are you feeling a sense of frustration, or are you just pragmatic about it?
from a personal standpoint, I'm frustrated because I have 10,000 miles on my truck and I still have to drive the damn thing, even though I paid for FSD. So that's annoying. From a content standpoint, I mean, the truck's doing what I need it to do. People are clicking on it. They're interested in it. We're learning the truck. It's interesting. It's exciting. So what I don't understand is Tesla just not giving us any timeline on things. They're like, why doesn't the truck have autopilot? The truck doesn't even, if you're about to drive off the road, it won't even steer you back on. There's a, like, the safety systems are not complete on the vehicle because they have no way to software control the steer by wire. It's your inputs only. The vehicle will never nudge the steering wheel. And to me, like, that's something I would expect to be in a vehicle that is, of course, known for autopilot, Tesla being a brand focused on driver assistance. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, with just doing the range test alone, it was so frustrating to me. And I hadn't realized how much I rely on the driver assist systems when I'm doing range tests, because I'm picking up my clipboard. I'm moving things around. I'm adjusting the cameras really briefly. I mean, my eyes are on the road, but I rely on the car to help me a little bit when I'm doing that. And I didn't have it. And I've got a combination of drivers next to me driving closer to me than what I'm comfortable with, because they want to get close to take pictures. People flocking around it. Someone driving closer to me behind than what they should be, closer to on the sides, and I'm trying to do things and the vehicle's not helping me at all. So I found that really frustrating. I know this is a weird use case, like normal people maybe wouldn't be doing that, but you know, talking about normal people, when I was stopped with the vehicle somewhere, I forget where I was, because I talked to 100 people this week. One guy came up to me and was like, yeah, how do you like it? I don't know if I'm going to get it. I found out that it, you know, I'm paying all this money and it doesn't have autopilot. So I'm like, well, you know, it has the hardware. It's just a matter, the software's not ready. So they're going to download it later. And he said, oh, so I'll get it later. I said, you should get it later. You know, Tesla's promising it, but don't bank that on me. He's like, oh, I just heard it doesn't have it. So what Kyle was just talking about is true. You know, like we know every little detail about everything. We know it's coming. Well, we think it's coming, you know, but you know, these are people out there that don't follow like we do. And they heard it doesn't have autopilot. Well, F that, you know, I paying $100,000 for something that doesn't have what their $40,000 car has, you know, how can they sell it? So yeah, it's a miss. I mean, if I understand why they're doing it. We all understand why they had to get this damn thing out. It's been delayed. They had to push it out. But at the very least, when you went to pick it up, there should have been a clipboard or something that you read through that said, I understand it doesn't have autopilot yet. We're working. I understand this.
I think there was.
Was there? Okay. Okay. Well, I didn't know that.
For some people, not for me. Yeah. I never got that message, but I saw screenshots of others saying you accept delivery without feature complete. I never got that warning, but I had, you know, obviously we're in the know.
Yeah.
And so that was it. And the whole video, and the intention from my side was not to be about Cybertruck. It was just in general, what should automakers leverage over the air updates about? But it was just in the context of Cybertruck and in the context of Macan, which are two completely different, you know, approaches to updates and vehicle functionality on delivery.
Well, Kyle, I think what you see is legacy brands versus these startups. That's where the big difference is. Look at Lucid. Lucid launched the Air without a complete suite of ADAS features, you know, but you would never see a Mercedes, a BMW, you know, a Volvo or somebody like that launch a new vehicle lacking such major pieces. You know what I mean? I mean, during the whole COVID supply chain problems, Ford was shipping vehicles without power seats and things like that. But that's different, you know? So I think that's the distinction more so. It's these new startups versus the legacy brands. The startups kind of feel like they can push out vehicles that just aren't ready. And hey, we'll make you whole later. And that's not cool. So I think that's what the gist of what you're saying.
And Dom, I know that you follow more the company side of things like this. Just give us your take on that, because we won't get into that. There was a big Tesla, they had their earnings call earlier this week, but there was some pushback from the investor community on the supposed cancellation of the cheap Model 2, so-called, and $25,000 car. And then on the call, their CEO, Elon Musk, said, oh, no, we are going to do that, but it's going to be made on the same lines as the 3 and the Y. But there was no pictures, there was no roadmap, there was no description, there was no unveiling. And he got irritated when one of the This is a very sensible question, which was, well, can you just tell us more about this affordable car? Is it effectively the 3 and the Y, but you're going to make savings with, effectively, they were saying, just economies of scale, and you'll get that 25 grand with subsidies? And he was like, oh, I'll tell you in August. And it was like, man, okay. But the market liked it, and Tesla was up this week. But the focus of Tesla was, we're not a car company anymore. We're an AI and robo-taxi company. Dom, I know you follow the company side of it. As Jared, I've put on screen, it says here, Jared Sutherland says, it's wild that Tesla released a vehicle which cannot even run their FSD package that Elon loves to talk about. That's a really good point. Like, he pitched Tesla. He said, look, if you're investing in Tesla as a car company, you shouldn't invest in us. He doesn't want Tesla to be thought of as a car company anymore. It's a robo-taxi AI company. But their latest, greatest, big, shiny thing doesn't have the thing that he wants us all to believe is the new thing. So what's your take, Dom?
I mean, it's a bad look. I mean, it's like the whole company doesn't seem like it's being run cohesively. And you can tell people aren't taking Elon's word for anything anymore. Like, they're pushing back against what he's saying in press conference. You know, people used to be very, you know, there was a lot of deference, you know, to what Elon said, and, you know, just accept what he says and take him at his word. But now, with, you know, it's such a big miss with the Cybertruck, and you know, just shipping something so soon is obviously not ready to be shipped, and they didn't coordinate all the parts and pieces in the software in time. You know, like a car company has to do. You know, it has to bring all these parts of the supply chain together, and their software and all their engineering. Everything has to come together at the same time. It's like cooking a big meal, right? You have to, you know, start cooking the rice early and this thing at this time, and it all comes together at this right time, and you serve the meal all at once. And this is like, you know, I'm getting potatoes, and I'll have to wait another half hour for my steak. That's no way to run a car company. And I'm surprised the investor community is kind of giving them a pass on this. You know, with their earnings call, I mean, the earnings are down, the revenue is down, their sales are down, which is not a good. I mean, this should not be. You know, it's losing some of its magic, and yeah, I think they really need to pull it together, or do something soon, because this is not a good trajectory, right? It's like the trend line is not going in a positive direction, and I think they really need to decide what they're doing and maybe start messaging exactly what that is, because now we don't know. There's no, you know, Tesla PR team to go out and combat, like, if a reporter says something that, you know, is not true or correct, you know, usually a PR team will come out and, you know, make those corrections and get back, and they'll, you know, press will write a correction and all that kind of thing. But that doesn't happen with Tesla, so I don't know, it's a little Mickey Mouse in a way, you know. It's just not a good look.
Yeah, and they also laid off their so-called content growth team this week in California that were put together only weeks ago under a very senior leader to create content, advertisements and stuff like that, which their CEO had said they were going to start doing more of to attract new people, the next stage of the adoption curve. That's all good. So they built this team in California, I think 40 people or so, and then midweek they laid them off as well. That was part of the cost cutting that's happening there. And the CEO very publicly slated them on his social network and said that the ads they'd made were generic. Now, that may have been true, but you don't want to be thrown under the bus by your boss sometimes. Sometimes either, you know, a quiet word or an arm around the shoulder, or just, if you've got nothing to say, not nice to say, don't say anything at all. But he slated them very publicly and then fired them all. So, very different, very difficult at the moment to know where they're going. Always reminds me of a phrase which I love, the weekly Tesla podcast called Ride the Lightning by Ryan McCaffrey. It was very interesting. He always says he's a Tesla fanboy and an enthusiast, and so he's always going to give it the slant of Tesla, and he always has this nice phrase of he's inclined to give them the benefit of the doubt. And that springs to mind, I just think at the moment Elon Musk has used up so much goodwill with promises, and unfortunately he does deliver sometimes, but also doesn't deliver. And so, like the boy who cried wolf, you don't know what to believe anymore. So, all right, well, let's wait till August, on the 8th of August, and we'll see what happens robo taxi wise. Anyway, I'd like to move on. We'll get to Macan. We'll do Macan next, actually. So we'll do Mercedes G-Wagon, then Macan driving impressions, and then we'll finish off with some more Tesla stuff and performance at the end of the podcast if we get time. So let's talk about this, the new G-Wagon or G580 EV. No, don't call it the G-Wagon, the electric G-Wagon. So quad motor setup, 580 horsepower, 900, almost 900 pound-feet of torque vectoring, so you can make each wheel do its own thing according to which one's got the most grip. It's got G-turn, so it'll spin on the spot for 360 degrees, the thing that Rivian was going to come with and then didn't at the last minute. And they said it's because of environmental reasons, because they don't want to chew up the trail, but I also suspect it's fabulously difficult to achieve. G-steering, which is their brand name for, you know, rear steering, and it'll help you reduce the turning radius. Obviously, great ground clearance. They talked about the off-road chops of this vehicle. 116 kilowatt hour battery pack. EPA estimated maybe 250, which is low for a big battery pack, but look at this thing. It's a slab going through the air. DC fast charging, 200 kilowatts, 10 to 80 in 32 minutes, which is fine, I think, respectable. It'll be luxurious inside, because they always are if you spec them that way. Latest MBUX infotainment all comes to the G-Class. I want to see what this G-Raw system is like. It'll mimic the characteristic engine notes of a combustion G. We talked about it last week with the Ioniq 5N, and I'm not waiting to be convinced. Kyle, I'll come to you first. The exclusive Edition 1 launch trim has unique colors and different packages, but I saw some stuff on your socials this week, and you were at an event. Were you driving or just having a look at this vehicle, and what did you think of it?
Yeah, so I was at the unveil of the car, which no driving yet, but I was there for the international launch of the G. It happened in China and the US kind of at the same time. And the US launch was maybe the craziest vehicle launch I've ever been to, because there was just a handful of journalists and YouTubers or stuff there. And I have a video coming. I haven't edited yet, but I filmed a video with the car, so that'll go up. It should have gone up yesterday, but it'll probably go up tomorrow. And it was a Travis Scott concert. So they invited like all of the local celebrities in Hollywood and Beverly Hills. So there's like everyone who I've never heard of. And Alyssa was like, oh, this person's there. That's this. I'm like, I don't know who that is. But there was like,
you're not
five
cool enough.
Spectres.
That's the thing.
Yeah. But Martin, there were five Spectres in the parking lot. So, you know, it was,
wow.
Client base was there. I was like, this is awesome. And a bunch of other cool cars. I cared more about the parking lot than I did, the event. So anyway, while it was so funny, there was not a single mention of the entire event about a G-Class or a Mercedes. Those words were never said. It was the concert started with Travis Scott on a G-Wagon rolling out on stage. He did the whole concert on the roof of the car and then left. And that was it. There was no like, this is the new electric G. This is how much it costs. There were no specs, not even a mention of the car. And the best part was, as soon as the concert started and he rolled out and the car was unveiled, they pulled the cover off of this beige one here in the back, and no one looked at it for 45 minutes. It was empty. I had it completely to myself. I was inside going through all the software menus, filming the car, of course, because it was so loud you couldn't hear audio, but I was like doing everything. And then a dude walks up and opens the car. He's like, security. He's like, you really shouldn't be in here. I'm like, I've been in here for 30 minutes. I filmed everything. Thanks, dude. See you later. So amazing. It was really a hilarious event. But some specs on the car. I think it's 112 kilowatt hour usable, which is kind of low. And it has four gearboxes. So it essentially has a low range for each motor, which is a very German solution to a problem that could be solved with just better motors. And they're like, no, mechanical engineering. Put four gearboxes in the thing. So it's the most German solution. It's honestly technically not very impressive. I'm sure the tuning of the motors are going to be cool. Perhaps the thermal systems, the durability cycle of the car, that's what G-Wagons are known for. But the charging is kind of lame. The performance is kind of lame. The range is definitely going to be kind of lame. Do people care? Obviously not, because I was at the target buyer event of this car, and they don't even give a crap about the G-Wagon. They were just like, yeah, we'll just buy it, whatever it costs. And they're just driving it to the store and back. It should be around $180,000. Should cost roughly what the AMG G63 costs, which that's not bad. I mean, these people, that's what they're spending 50 or 100 over on top of that anyway to get the combustion ones. So Yeah, they'll sell everyone they can make. And, you know, no question, I did have a chat with one of the engineers. I found the one German that was at the event. And I was like, what can you tell me about this car? You know, just trying to hear each other over everything. And, you know, it just went through. They said it's even tougher than the combustion G-Wagon, which is crazy. And they'll send me more information in the future. But I have the full release, and I'll do the video on it soon.
Tom, what do you reckon?
So, you know, I'm a little torn. I love the G-Wagons, and my aunt's on like her fourth or fifth one now. So she's been driving G-Wagons for the last 20 something years. So I've had a lot of experience driving hers through the years, and I've always loved them. I mean, they're such unique, you know, fantastic vehicles. I whenever I get the opportunity to take it for a while, I do. So I actually asked her about it, and it's interesting. They don't drive it far. You know, when, you know, when you're playing in this game, when you've got, you know, a G-Wagon in your driveway, that's not the only vehicle you have in your driveway. You know, you've got two or three other vehicles, you know, they have a Bentley also. And, you know, but I talked to her about the range, and I said, you know, it's going to have about 240 miles of range. In the winter, it's going to be under 200. And she's like, oh, we can't make it to Mark's house, which is somewhere where they go, which is almost 100 miles away in South Jersey. She's like, yeah, I wouldn't like that. She's like, that's not going to work. And I'm like, well, do you currently take the G-Wagon? And she's like, you know, we usually take the Bentley when we go there. And I'm like, okay, well, you know, you know, so is it a big deal? And she's like, yeah, I just want the ability. Like she said, for me, for an electric vehicle, I know you've been telling us to get an electric vehicle for years now. She goes, I want to know I can go at least 100 miles away and get back home. She goes, that's my measuring stick. And I said, in the winter, I probably would say this won't make it. You know, at highway speeds, 100 miles probably isn't. It's probably not going to do 200 miles. I'll tell you right now, it definitely won't do 200 miles in the winter. So, I'm torn. I wish, you know, this is such a no compromise vehicle. I wish the range, estimated range rating started with a 3, and just find a place for the battery, stuff them under the rear seat or something. The people that buy this doesn't care if it's 40 grand more. That doesn't matter to the people that buy these.
It's not a cost thing, Tom. It's a weight. It's a global vehicle. Yeah. And in certain markets, yeah, you have to have a special license to operate a heavy vehicle. And this plus the payload, is especially in Europe, is right up on that mark. So any more battery meant you couldn't actually drive it.
They couldn't have a bigger battery option for the US, because it can't weigh more than a Hummer.
So in the US, we don't really have this restriction until you get above, I want to say 26,000 pounds gross combined weight rating. But in Europe, they do. And so that was their explanation. I said the same thing as you. I'm like, let's have a US specific version. We're the largest market for G-Wagon behind China. Like, what's going on here? At the end of the day, it is just kind of lame specs. But I have to say, Tom, maybe you'll agree with me, I love how they just said Epic to Arrow and just kept it a box. They didn't EQify it. They didn't make it a blob. It is a G-Wagon. And you can even get the combustion grill. You don't have to get the silly light up grill. It can look identical to the combustion one. And I'm like, that's freaking sick.
And the truth of the matter is, this would be fine for my aunt. Like, they never take their current G-Wagons more than 200 miles. But they want to know if they want to, they can, you know? So it's kind of weird, but I love it. I just wish to hell it had a bigger battery. And, you know, the 10 to 80, Martin, you brought that up, you know, in 32 minutes, that's not bad, but you have to factor in range. You can't just talk about the 10 to 80. So that's 70% of a vehicle that, you know, let's say in the colder weather is going to go about 200 miles. So it's a half an hour to add 140 miles. That sucks. You know, that's not good. So, you know, they could have done a little bit better for the amount of money. And this is a no compromise premium. It's an ultra premium vehicle. And with electric vehicles, premium is range and charging speed. They could have done better on that, I think. And maybe this is just, you know, testing the waters. But, I just wish that their estimated range started with a 3. And, you know, the thing, you know, could with that go 10 to 80 in 30 minutes, you know, with a 300 mile range, then okay. You know, now they did something that I think more people can get into, but we'll see. The people that, like I said in the beginning, the people that buy this have, you know, $500,000 worth of other vehicles in their driveway half the time. So to them, this is just driving around town and showing off the latest, greatest thing. Like my aunt, you know, whenever they make any kind of change, it could be the dumbest thing that she doesn't care about. Oh, I need to get a new G-Wagon. You know, it's they just added it's got a new sun visor. Let's trade this in. You know, I want that sun visor.
Yeah, a couple of comments.
Tom, they probably don't lose that much money on them because G-Wagons hold their value incredibly well.
Oh yeah,
and they trade them in to the dealer, you know, and it make it easy. So you're probably right, but you know, it's just funny that she brought that up. Oh, you know, can we make it there? You know, and I'm like, but do you ever take? Don't you take the Bentley there? Oh yeah, well yeah, but if I want to, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I realized I had a bit of a gap in my knowledge on just the lineage of these vehicles. I had like an Auto Trader a few weeks ago now when I knew that the electric version of this was coming. And Carl's exactly right. The prices of 20-year-old ones that are basic are just through the roof. And I'm like, right, this is a whole subculture which I'm not immersed in and I want to learn some more, but that's fascinating. I had a comment on screen. 3,500 kilograms appears to be the limit in Europe on a regular license. This is 3,065. So there is some wiggle room, but I guess you've got to add... That might be curb weight, so you need to add some passengers in as well. So there you go. Look, before we move on and get some driving impressions on the Porsche Electric Macan, which will be one of the most popular vehicles in terms of important vehicles that Porsche's ever made, let's finish off talking about this. Dominic, from your vantage point in the 32 degrees Celsius heat that you're in right now, what do you make of this this vehicle? That I'm sure there's plenty of these flying around with some, you know, privacy windows in Abu Dhabi where you are.
Sorry, gentlemen coming in. So, you know, I'm looking at that charging speed and that range, and I'm thinking, you know, Mercedes battery technology is not where it needs to be. Like, for premium vehicles like this, buy the cells from CATL, CATL. They have, you know, faster charging. They have 5C batteries now. They have the power or the energy density. You can get 150 whatever kilowatt hours in a G-Wagon, I'm pretty sure. You wedge that in there, and then you get over the 300-mile range, which it should offer. Even if people don't take it that way, people need to have that sort of ability just know that they can if they wanted to. Because, I mean, we don't see G-Wagons on the open roads too often. You know, they're always around L.A. or South Beach in Miami or, you know, New York City. You don't see them out in the open Wyoming anywhere, right? That's not what it is.
Well, actually, I wouldn't maybe say that's true. There's a couple... There's a couple like really rich Wyoming ranchers that roll like, you know, F-350 Platinums and their wife drives a G63. And you always know because they're just covered in mud and it's like a brand new G-Wagon or something nice. So, yeah. But nice. You're right. Most of them are just going to the Air One in Beverly Hills.
Yeah. Well, I just think that's like that goes for like a lot of the Western automakers, you know, just their battery technology. The Chinese have really, especially CATL, they're really kind of pushing hard, you know, ahead with, you know, greater energy density and faster charging speeds. But I had a question, Kyle. You're talking about the gearboxes. It's got a two-speed gearbox, a high and low, basically?
It's got four of them, one for each motor.
Right, but each one has like two speeds.
Yep. And it's a physical low-range selection. Limits your top speed, I think, to 52 miles an hour, which normally it's 100 and something, 108, I don't know. It's basically just cut everything in half, double the torque. And, you know, you have to be in that low range to do the G-turn and to do G-steer, by the way. Martin, isn't rear steering, but it's rear, like, torque vector steering, if you will.
Oh. So
pull the inside rear, push the outside rear, and just help pivot the car around a bit. But it's actually a solid rear axle. It's ladder frame, solid rear axle, which is kind of crazy. It's all G stuff. And the reason is durability. Magna, of course, is a sponsor of Out of Spec, so they build the G-Wagon. But they're not responsible for the design or the communication on the car or anything like that. But Mercedes contracts Magna employees to do repeated durability test loops on the car. So I was in a G550, the V8 one, on something called Shuckle Mountain, which is every G-Wagon has a Shuckle badge in there. It says Shuckle approved. and it's not a crazy mountain. I would like, we went up it nice and slow in the G550. I'm like, oh yeah, it's pretty capable, locking diffs. You know, it's got three of those. That's awesome. Like, nice work. That was great. And then they're like, oh, well, now we're going to start the durability test loop. And we did 70 to 80 miles an hour down a mountain, jumping it constantly, smashing the bottom into rocks. Absolute, like, I'm surprised this thing had wheels on it. And that's for me. I'm pretty hard on cars. I've never done what I did in this G-Wagon. And then the crazier part was, I was like, holy shit, it just survived that? That's insane. Then it had 50,000 kilometers of that every day. And I'm like, oh, okay, I get it. G-Wagons are just, nothing can touch them. And I'm a Range Rover guy, but nothing can touch a G.
Well, that is, let's have a look at
And isn't comment. It a shame, like, almost no owners do that? You know, like they're soccer mom vehicles. They go to the supermarket and pick up groceries. They go to the store and pick up their latest jewelry and stuff, you know, and they park outside of fancy restaurants so everybody knows you have a G-Wagon. They don't take them off-roading. It's such a shame. Sorry, Martin.
Oh, no worries. A quick comment from our friend Todd Wilson, who says, any comments on the ZDX? Because I know I see from Kyle's socials, that's where you've been. Is that right? But I'm not sure you can talk about too much yet, but I want to check with you.
Yeah, I can tell you everything except how it drives.
Okay, right. Well, let's quickly do that, as we've had a listener, a viewer ask, and then we'll move on to the McCann.
Yeah. So it's, you know, the Cadillac Lyriq was the donor car for the ZDX platform. So the specs are similar, except there's two versions of ZDX. There's ZDX A-Spec and ZDX, why is it blanking on me now? The one I drove yesterday, S. I know this ZDX. I got to look at the back. Type S. What the heck? Sorry. So we spent the day driving the ZDX Type S, and I can't tell you how it drives, but I can at least tell you that overall, it's a Cadillac Lyriq, but with a lot more equipment. So it actually has air suspension, which the Lyriq doesn't have. It has big brakes that the Lyriq doesn't have. It has big wheels, which look great. It's got quite a bit of equipment in there. It's got essentially the same system as Super Cruise. It's called Acura Watch 360 Plus, I think, but it's essentially Super Cruise. And I did a podcast with the guy responsible, John Huang, for the project, and talked a lot about what Acura and GM did, because, of course, this is pretty much a GM-specced vehicle, a GM platform, and GM-produced vehicle under contract for Acura. And so Acura really just did the top hat design. They designed the car. They went to GM originally and said, here are all the attributes we want our car to have. What do you have built for the Ultium platform that we can use to build our car? And GM sounds like they kind of just did everything. And so I would think of it less of an Acura and more as a GM product that you can purchase through Acura. And that's how I went into it for my review. But here's the crazy thing. And I was arguing with all the Acura people last night. They really hate me now, but that's okay. They sell a $64,000 base price of this car. It does not have lane centering. Then you go, okay, let me go up what, 68 grand, 67 something for the all-wheel drive. No lane centering, not available. You have to spend mid $70,000 for the top performance one to get lane centering. And to me, they were like, oh, who needs lane centering? What do you mean? You just drive it. I'm like, this is an electric vehicle that's like 68 grand and doesn't even have lane. Are you crazy? And they're like, oh, no one wants that. So I was just causing a big stir at the whole event over this thing. And people probably think I'm nuts, but I was just like, I can't tell our audience to ever buy this car, regardless of how it drives. And I was just like, holy smokes. But at least you can get it if you get the Type S, which that's only going to be 15% roughly of total sales volume. So I don't know. That really frustrated me. And the fact that they didn't really seem to understand or care, I was like, wow, you really don't understand EV buyers.
Yeah, pretty much. All right. Well, we look forward to your driving impressions on that when we can get them. All right. Yeah. So I know we talked about McCann, but I'd forgotten that we hadn't talked about driving impressions, which you can now do because you've been on that drive, and we'll get the impressions of the rest of the team in a moment. So yes, I hadn't prepared to talk about this, but we know that the Porsche McCann is going to be a bigger seller than the Taycan. It's in a different segment, a different market, and we think it will be more popular. Now, the actual specs for the version that would be the Macan Turbo is going to have a 95 kilowatt hour usable battery, 100 kilowatt hours gross, 800 volt architecture, of course, a battery pack that can split itself. Like we've heard that technology talked about before. We'll get the insight on that to make sure it charges at the maximum speed on all the various different chargers. 3.3 seconds, not to 62 miles an hour, not to 100 kph. And range of, I think, 480 kilometers WLTP on this. But does it have the Porsche stuff like the dual speed gearbox? Does it charge as quick as the Taycan, which the new Taycan is, what's that, over 300 kilowatts because of the new battery chemistry, which actually slightly differs from the battery chemistry that they put inside the Macan. But let's get all the details and let's get the driving impressions first up from Kyle, because you've been on that drive, and maybe answer some of the questions that I've asked as well. I like the suspension. Is it air suspension, adaptive suspension? Has it got that dual speed gearbox? And what do you think of driving it, Kyle? We'll come to you first.
Yeah, well, I spent 2 days driving this car all around France, which was some great driving routes. I didn't really even realize it. I mean, I'd spent more time in the Italian hills than the French hills, and wow, some good roads around there. And I drove both the Macan 4 and the Macan Turbo, and both will be the launch specifications. They'll fill in other models into the near future, I imagine. And I thought, first of all, the car is just great. If you're thinking about buying a premium electric SUV, Porsche couldn't mess the car up. They didn't mess the car up, and it does everything a Porsche needs to do. That's not to say it does everything I want it to do. A big omission here is one pedal driving, which its sister car, the Q6 e-tron, supports. So I'm like, just put it in this one. And the Porsche guys, well, we have a philosophical thing about one pedal. I'm just giving an option. People are not going to buy the car because of this. And I'm like, holy shit, this is crazy. So anyway, other than that, chassis amazing, brakes amazing. Powertrain, you know, we're not talking plaid levels here, but we are talking plaid money. So that's kind of something that is always a trade-off with the Porsche cars. You got to spend big money to get big acceleration. But as a total package, I think most people are going to be very pleased with the standard car, the Macan 4. Air suspension is standard in the US. There is a spring version for other markets, but we get adaptive damper with compression and rebound adjustment. And also a two-chamber air system as standard for the U.S. cars. The U.S. cars come pretty highly equipped compared to the rest of the world. And also the U.S. turbos come with pretty much everything, which is really nice. I mean, there's still more you can add on, but like even a more base turbo is coming pretty highly equipped, which means by the time you spec up a Macan 4 with like all the stuff that you kind of want, it's only about $10,000 more for the turbo. Which that's going from the base to the top trim. In Porsche world, that's unheard of. So they really, you know, 120 grand gets you like a maxed out. 125 is maxed out Macan. 90 to 95 is like a nice entry level Macan 4. And they are going to sell every single one of these that they can build for the first couple years. Then we'll have to see what the limitations are on the platform. I still think software could use more features. Phone is a key, dog mode, things that are just normal, you know, that I can't just text someone the key to this car and have them drive it. That's annoying. It's something I love from Tesla. So Porsche is trying. I spent a lot of time with their software division and they're like, we're a new team. We know what we need to do. They're very familiar with the Tesla stuff, very familiar with the Rivian stuff. And they're like, we're pushing as hard as we can. The main priority was get the finished product to market. And now with over the air, they can do some more things, but I don't think it's going to be supported like the, you know, like the US startups are supporting their vehicles from an over the air standpoint. That's just something we won't see from German automakers. But overall, anyone who buys this car is going to love it. It's not for me. I didn't review this car as would Kyle Connor buy this car, because it's not really for me. It's for someone like my mom. You know, she's owned combustion Macans, two of them in the past, and this has her written all over it. She's going to love it. It's incredibly high quality and you can customize it however you'd like to with colors and trims and features and options, and it drives amazingly.
All right. I'm going to go to Dominic next. I want to hear your thoughts on this because it has been delayed. It was put back with software partly to blame, according to all the reports that I read. This sits in a Polestar 4 territory and, you know, it's certainly, for Porsche buyers, the choice has been the Taycan until now. Add this to the mix. What do you think of it?
I mean, this is a large market expansion potential here. I think, you know, people like the Taycan, of course, but it's a sedan. But people love SUVs and crossovers, and this is just like the right size vehicle. And Polestar does have a competitor. I mean, that's Polestar is trying to play in the same space, but Porsche has the name, the heritage. They'll have the sales. You know, Polestar will have to work hard to sell their cars. Porsche just has to put this out there, get some good reviews, get some good word of mouth going, and it should, you know, fly off the shelves, as it were. Hopefully you can hear me. I've got like a discotheque just opened up in the building beside me.
That's
I could barely hear you moments ago.
That's fine, mate. The noisier, the better. I mean, you're on location. That's brilliant. Okay. And then in terms of the price of this, you are up against, I guess, some fantastic vehicles, you know, around $100,000. We talked about the Cybertruck already on the podcast today.
Your EQE high-end money, right? You're into the big boy German stuff. That's another class above in terms of size and maybe even features in some cars. And so, you know, if you're a lot of Porsche people will only drive a Porsche because Porsches drive a certain way. They have a certain steering feel. They have a certain seating position. You just fit so great in the car. I'm one of those people that it's like, I appreciate all the crazy nerding out on the stuff I care about in a vehicle. Most people are not driving enthusiasts, which means a lot of the Macan's uniqueness and specialty and I would say unique selling points are not relevant to most drivers. That's why I love the car so much, because they build it for me. But it's wasted on a lot of people. You're right. And a lot of those people might be better off buying a BMW iX, which is a much larger vehicle. However, the one thing, Martin, that we should talk about is this car on a road trip is going to be a monster.
Because
it's
of the charging?
New Taycan. Yeah, it's better than old Taycan. So it holds peak longer, 270 kilowatts to about 55%, they say. It's going to be pretty good. We'll have to do the charging test. I did a charging test on the car, but the charger was the limitation. So I'm not going to post it because it's not representative of what the car can do. And so it still was a monster on what I did. And I was just like, damn, this is going to be insane on a trip. I got to go on a road trip as soon as possible in this car. It's going to be really, really a good mile muncher. It's got good driver assistance now. Lane centering rocks finally in a Porsche. So it's like a great total package. Burmester sound system absolutely rips. One of the top sound systems I've heard in the car. They really nailed it.
And new Taycan charges at 320?
Yeah, 320.
Yeah. Okay, right. And again, it's a slightly different cell chemistry they've used, in case you were thinking, well, Porsche just bought a job lot and stuck them in whatever they can get. But no, they really do fine-tune
Not
it down.
Not only chemistry, but cell makeup as well. Macan's prismatic and Taycan's pouch. So it's completely different.
Yeah, so then they're not just rolling it out sort of cookie cutter, being like, right, another Porsche vehicle. It's the same thing, but a little bit different if you want more space than the Taycan. Tom, I need to ask you what you think of this.
So, I mean, I love it. I love how it looks. I could see myself driving one of these. I like that size, that type of a package. And it was interesting what Martin was saying before. Kyle was saying about... you know, a lot of the owners might not nerd out over the stuff that he specifically does. And we're talking about other vehicles that you can compare it to. But we could kind of say the same thing for the combustion Macan in its price range with its competition, yet it still sells really well. You know, and I think that goes back to the part of how people are Porsche loyalists and how people that maybe aren't loyalists aspire to drive a Porsche, you know? And so I think it's going to do well, even considering it's in very, very tough competitive space with that price range and what it's going to sell at. I think it'll do well. I mean, it's not going to be a high volume. It's not going to sell as many copies as the combustion Macan does, because combustion Macan costs a lot less. But, you know, it's in that price range. I think it's going to be really competitive. I like it. I haven't driven one yet, though. That has to be noted.
Does it have rear wheel steering? Yes, it does. In some markets, as an option.
It's optional.
Dominic, sorry. Yeah. So, Dominic.
I'm all right. But I was going to say earlier that the one thing about the special about the Macan EV is that it looks like the Porsche Macan that consumers have been buying for the last 20 years. It doesn't look radically different, which is one of the problems with like the BMW iX. I think it's a wonderful car, but people really have a problem with its looks. And I thought its crazy looks would make it like a sort of an it car, so people would see it and have maybe conflicting feelings about it, but it would get you noticed, and it would be it's one of those vehicles that people buy because it's recognizable, identifiable. But that's not the case. I mean, and so I think Porsche has really kind of done the right thing, stayed with the formula that they have. That's been a successful formula. That's really that's
one thing I want to bring up. Martin mentioned the fact that it has the rear steering. That reminds me, I didn't talk about that with the Cybertruck. Mm. Makes a huge difference. I mean, Kyle's been to my house here. He knows I have a landing at the top of my driveway, and I've got these big vehicles now, and I kind of have to make like 4-point K turns to turn around. My friend has one of the new Tahoes, the Denali, not Tahoe, the Denali version of the Tahoe. It's a GMC, and he hates pulling up my driveway because he's got to make like a 10-point turn. He's got the extended version. The Cybertruck, I could pull up my driveway and with one turn, Kyle, be in my garage. You know the driveway more than anybody else. Can't do that with the Lightning. Got to swing wide, back up, go forward, back up, and then pull in. But with the Lightning is only a couple inches bigger. With the Cybertruck, my first shot, I went right in the garage. And I was like, wow, I could live with this. Like, I really wish the Lightning had rear wheel steering. When you get a vehicle that has rear wheel steering, you appreciate, especially a big one, you appreciate how much that helps. I mean, it helps in just driving and handling the car. That's one thing. But the lower speed maneuverability, oh God, this thing was so big, but I'm in parking lots. I went to the shopping center. I'm backing into parking spaces that I know with the Lightning, I'd be like, am I hitting that car? I'd be looking at the cameras and everything. But the one thing, Kyle, that freaked me out, you might know this better than I do. It has no parking sensors. What the hell? Like, it doesn't beep up.
That's
like,
every Tesla.
I was afraid I was going to hit my, I know, but this is like the next gen Tesla and, the new great thing. Oh, like, my driveway with the wall, you have very bad rear vision. Yeah. Even the rear camera's not good on it. It's not as good as my Lightning or Rivian's rear camera, in my opinion. And because I rented it, I was so afraid I was going to back into the block wall that I have here. That would bother me. I mean, the rear wheel steering's awesome, but the damn thing needs backup sensors.
Yeah.
Bring back ultrasonics. I'm a fan of sensors.
Yeah.
As many sensors. Yeah. I quickly want to get, Kyle, your thought on the thoughts on the Tesla Model 3 performance as you own a Plaid Model S. Before we move on to that, one quick one. Sometimes when you're pushing the buttons and stuff, I mentally zone out a little bit. So apologies if you discussed the battery splitting, but if we didn't, just for anyone watching who was curious about that I mentioned, we talk about 400 volt, 800 volt. This is actually a 660 volt odd nominal pack, peaks at less than 800, about 765 volts on the pack. But chargers operate at certain voltages as well. This pack can split itself, if I can use that word. We seem to be talking about how, 800 volt packs can effectively work in two halves and work better on 400 volt charging stations. Kyle, can you just briefly explain, did you get a chance to charge the vehicle? How will that work the same or differently to the existing technologies that we've had that already in vehicles?
Yeah, so of course, with high voltage vehicles and existing charging infrastructure, the biggest one for us is the Tesla Supercharger network that has a maximum of roughly around 500 volt output. The vehicles need to go into some sort of compatibility mode or some situation that will allow the vehicle to accept a lower voltage input and then boost it to charge the battery pack natively. Previous Taycan actually has a physical booster that essentially splits the pack or doubles the voltage, but it's a separate box. Ioniq 5, EV6, the EGMP cars use the rear motor's inverter to step up the voltage to charge the battery pack, because the battery pack can't really change its voltage. The only way you can change the voltage of a battery pack is to actually split it into, well, in this case, two halves. And the Cybertruck does the exact same thing. So Macan and Cybertruck leverage the same technology of splitting the pack essentially in two. A lot of people think it charges one first and then the other. They have to basically be matched. completely, but they're just split, basically taking a series configuration into parallel when the charging process begins. I have not, well, that's not true. I have charged Macan in split pack when I did the range test months and months ago. But since that was not within the scope of what I was allowed to talk about, I could never talk about it. The end user would have no idea. There's no any, you just hear an extra little click. And honestly, the Macan was so quiet. The Cybertruck goes ka-chunk when you plug it into a supercharger. But other than that, it's, you know, the Macan, you would have no idea what's going on. You're just going to have limited performance. It'll take the same 410 amps roughly from the charger at pack voltage. It's going to be really low pack voltage. So you're going to get 135-ish kilowatt peak. But it will not do, like Brandon's asking, he hopes it'll do over 500 amps. It will not.
No.
Okay. So it's limited charging performance on 400 volt.
Right. Okay. Now, I've got a couple of minutes before we lose you to your commitments today. So let's talk about the new 2024 Tesla Model 3 Performance. It's not called a ludicrous. It's a performance. 510 horsepower up from 455, 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds. And it's got the new adaptive dampers for better handling, track mode V3, new aerodynamics, new front and rear fascia as well. If you know what you're looking for, it is a little bit different. Carbon fiber spoiler on the back as well. And yeah, track mode V3, like I mentioned, which allows drivers to customize the performance parameters, a more predictable driving experience on track for those that want to get into the weeds of these kind of things. Some new 20-inch forged aluminium wheels, use of some different hardware on the vehicle in terms of the chassis performance. So it is engineered differently. But we've got some other stuff to get through, like tax credits and whether this is a cheaper vehicle to buy than long range, which is should be cheaper. Anyway, let's talk about those kind of things. First of all, with Kyle, before we lose you, what did you make of when we finally heard about the top of the range Model 3?
Well, this is something I've been anticipating for a really long time, because I, of course, own a current Model 3 Performance. I've had it for years and years. It's got 150,000 miles on it, something like that. So I'm really familiar with the car up to this point. I had just come off the Ioniq 5N program when this was announced. So I was in the mood of not crazy expensive, but reasonably-ish price performance EVs. And the whole time I was driving the Ioniq 5N, I was just like, man, I hope Tesla has a response to this. I hope they go crazy hardcore. And they actually did not go that direction. It sounds like they spiced it up a little bit from before, but it's also not nearly as expensive as the Ioniq 5. It's $53,000+, but it qualifies for the $7,500 tax credit and the $5,000 credit, at least in Colorado. And so this has got to be the best performance to dollar ratio you can get. I have not driven the car, but I have been hands-on with it. I've sat in it. I've tried the seats, the interior. It now gets bespoke seats, which maybe I'm using that word wrong, right? Because bespoke means like custom for, but this is just a new seat option for the Model 3 Performance, and it's got pretty aggressive bolstering. It feels more special. Car's got a little bit of a front lip, a little bit of a diffuser change, the rear spoiler, just like the other cars, but they've done a little bit more to spice this one up. And it sounds like even more thermal longevity, brand new drive unit over the previous car that has really big spec increases for the drive unit, but the car does not realize those enhancements. So I still think they're going to do a spicier version of Model 3. Maybe they will call that one ludicrous. I don't know. But I think there's room in it. Right now, I think they're battery limited. The car makes different power in different markets based on what battery is in there. The US car is the spiciest version. So the Shanghai cars come with a different battery pack that is power limited. So I think it's 460 horsepower in Canada and Europe. And we get the full 510, 380 kilowatt output version. Track mode V3 has been enhanced. It now has an adaptive damper with a fixed suspension, which is big news because now the car can actually settle down and ride nice, but then firm up. And overall, these are going to be everywhere because, as Martin noted, if you qualify for the tax credit, this is cheaper than the long range. So why wouldn't you get all of this tech, all of this improvement? It's the best value performance car on sale.
Absolutely. I read on Tesla Motors Club this week that the ludicrous name, this might just be nonsense or somebody made it up, but the ludicrous name internally is being reserved for, and you'll know the phrase better than I do, silicon carbide something something's motor What's the inverters. On the plaid? You've got that. Okay, right. So whatever you've got on the plaid is some sort of motor technology, motor surround that that isn't on these motors, but they reserve that. So this is called performance. Anyway, before we lose you, final question. Does this kill the Model S plaid? Would you just have this because it's a better performing car on track at performance?
Just depends why you're buying a Model S plaid. Model S plaid is a muscle car. That's 1,000 horsepower and a dailyable with a hatchback package that is going to ride smoother. And it's a bit older, but like Model S achieves something totally different. No, there's very few people that are actually out there tracking their Model S plaids. They're just like ripping it from stoplights and doing, you know, big speed runs. This is like a tactile performance car. Model 3 has a great chassis. The base chassis is amazing. And they've just completely enhanced all the bushings and suspension that I haven't driven it yet, but just based off of friends that have driven it, they're like, this is actually really good. And I hope to have a go within the next days or weeks so I can make a video for you guys. But if you're into tracking, if you're into autocross, if you're into canyon driving, this is the clear choice over the Model S by far. It's going to be a much more of a driver's car. But with that, I have to leave. So I'll see you guys.
We appreciate you taking you're on your travels. Thank you so much for joining. Take care. Right, Tom, you were a Model 3 owner in the past. What do you make of this?
Well, straight out, I would take it over a Model S plaid, 100%. Even if the price delta was closer, I would
based
still
on size?
Take,
size?
Yeah,
or what?
Yeah. I think it's going to be a better driving car. And that's me personally. I like smaller vehicles. I just prefer them. The Model S, I never was in love with driving any of the versions. I mean, I thought the plaid was just insane. I mean, the straight line acceleration, I've talked about this. I did 4 or 5 runs in a row to a 0 to 100 miles an hour on a desert road, you know, where I live out in the country. No one's anywhere near me. It's like a farming area. And I got sick. I had to pull over and like stop because I felt like I was going to throw up. That's the amount of torque and the G-force is just nuts. So I'm sure it's not going to feel like that, but just for everyday drivability, I prefer the Model 3 and this performance version now ups the ante. I think it looks a lot better, even though it's kind of subtle changes. I would take this in a second. If I was looking for that type of vehicle right now, I'm pretty content with the Rivian and the Lightning and the Bolt that I have. I'm tempted to drive one of these, and I'm afraid if I drive one, I'll order one. But I think Tesla did a nice job with the improvements.
I agree.
Not huge, but just enough and just in the right places. I like how the inside looks. I love that front end now. It's so much better. Never liked the front end of the 3. I mean, it grew on me and I got used to it. But even the rear looks, the refresh on the rear is so nice. They did a really nice job with this. They're better than what I expected, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I saw so many comments this week from people saying, you know, they've got nothing left in their locker. They've got basically one car, the Model Y, this, which they just keep tweaking around the edges. I'll provide the counter narrative to that. But isn't this like Apple? And Apple do absolutely fine. Thank you. You know, depending on what day of the week it is, they're the most valuable company in the world. I think Alphabet had a good week by the look of it. Meta not so, but either way, however you cut it, like Apple are a massive success, and every time a new iPhone comes out, of which I've got the 2 generations old one, it's just a little bit different, and yet everyone goes and buys it because they want something that's a little bit different. Like, why does Tesla always have to be coming out with new Cybertrucky type stuff, and then they iterate on their success of the Model 3, the OG big seller for them, and then they get criticized for it. Like, I'm not always Tesla's biggest fan, but I agree, Tom, they've done an amazing job with this. I'm kind of pleased they didn't use the ludicrous name. I like sticking with Tesla Model 3 Performance just because I like that. They've still got the badge on the back, but also, even though I appreciate the comedy, Spaceballs didn't translate over here. Well, I was born 78, so maybe that's just a little bit too late. Maybe I was too young to appreciate that movie when it came out in the late 80s, but I don't get any of the Spaceballs stuff. So ludicrous plaid, whatever. I don't like. It's just the name of a car for me. There's no cultural reference there with the comedy, but either way, just call it Performance. Dom, you are a current Model 3 owner. Is this an upgrade for you one day?
Man, it's so tempting, right? So I've driven a new Highland, and I really appreciate the new steering geometry changes, and so I think the handling will be slightly improved. And then with the new dampening on the suspension, adaptive dampers is what it is.
Yep.
Right. So with that, and then with the soundproofing and everything, but you know, I really miss the stocks. So, you know, so if I had like the budget, I'd be looking hard at the Hyundai Ioniq 5N, you know, I'd really have to have a good look at that one as well.
That is a $65,000 car. This, right, with the federal tax credit, cash on the hood now as it is a $47,130 vehicle. Before local incentives, that's, as Kyle already said, pound for pound or pound for performance. Crazy.
It's over $50,000. Is still eligible for the $7,500 tax credit?
Yes, up to what is it? 55. Yeah,
oh, okay. So
it's just under.
I saw that online and had me playing games, so I couldn't remember. Because I did see someone who I, you know, respected say it was cheaper to buy the performance than the long range all-wheel drive.
I believe it,
right?
Is.
Yeah.
I'll check Tesserati. I mean,
who
can
buy any long range now when you can get this much more performance for less money? I mean, maybe not everyone. Maybe those seats aren't everybody's, you know, cup of tea. It's not as comfortable as the regular Highland or the regular refreshed Model 3. Those seats are great with the ventilation and everything. Do these seats have ventilation?
Yes.
I imagine they do, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. And apparently on MKBHD's video, because interestingly, some media got access to this way in advance. The company that infamously doesn't like annoying people like us who commentate on their company, Top Gear, Marquez, and some others as well, you know, the channel with millions of followers,
right,
were given the car in California to drive, much like a traditional car company, despite the CEO saying they're no longer a car company. But
That was probably done by that team that was just fired.
Probably was. So, yeah, the content.
That was in that time frame when they were there.
Yeah.
So.
They're like, but that makes sense, right? You invite a bunch of influencers. Marquez got 20 million subscribers. It was a great 10, 12 minutes that he did on it. Was very complimentary. That's bound to sell vehicles. Yeah. But no, and he was saying, anyway, I digress, that the ventilated seats go all the way up to the top as well, to your neck, and it's a very nice seat that they've put in there.
And there's a discussion in the comment section right now about the lack of stocks. So give my impression. When I drove the Plaid, I really didn't like it. I didn't like the yoke. I couldn't get used to it. Now that I drove the Cybertruck. Cybertruck doesn't have a yoke. It's kind of like an oval steering wheel, which I liked a lot better than the yoke. I'd still rather have a round steering wheel, but I got used to it really quickly. And I also got used to the buttons for the blinkers really quickly. The shifter never really bothered me that much on the screen, but the blinkers really bothered me with regards to the not having the stock. But I got used to them really quickly with the Cybertruck. The only problem I had, I mean, I drove it exclusively for a few days, but then I noticed when I went back to my Lightning or my Rivian and drove it one day for a little bit, then went back in the Cybertruck, I had to relearn it. Like, if all I drove was a Cybertruck, I know it would be no problem, but the fact that I had other vehicles that I was mixing in driving, I think your brain, at least my brain, I might not have the best, highest functioning brain, had difficulty dealing with that. Like, okay, which vehicle am I in a split second when you're putting on your blinker? Do I have to reach for my thumb or do I swipe down? So that was the only problem I had. Now, maybe if I had it for a couple months, things would be easier. But I don't think so, because even with my vehicles now, I have moments where I'm like, okay, what do I do? If I'm like between the Lightning and the Rivian, and even just adjusting things, you know, when split second decisions are made, I'm like, okay, shit, what vehicle am I in? Oh yeah, I do this. And I was finding that happening with the Lightning, and the blinker is kind of important because it's something in many instances, you only have 4 or 5 second window to put it on. And if your brain takes 2 seconds to respond to say, okay, what vehicle am I in? That's right. Thumb has to go up and press. Okay. You might already be too close to the turn where you're going to be turning, you know? And so that I can see that still being a problem, but I will say I got used to it really quickly. When all I drove was it became second nature, but I got tripped up once I started mixing in with my other vehicles.
Yeah. Stocks are just, there's so all, you know, we've had them forever. You know, that's the heritage of cars since, I don't know, the 40s, the 30s. I mean, it's just what we do since, you know, we've all been using them since we got our licenses. And like you said, switching back and forth, I had to really, you know, I was hitting the turn signals on the wheel by the end of my half hour or so test drive of the refreshed Model 3. But, you know, I really had to kind of think about it and look, kind of glance down and make sure I'm like on the button. And maybe that muscle memory would, you know, come together a little bit better with more time. But man, I don't know why. I don't mind missing the stock for the gear shift. That's fine. I can, don't mind on the screen or the predictive gear shifting. That
helped.
Yeah. I can live with that. That's not a problem. It's just, give me that. And if you can't get the rain sensors to work also, you know, might as well put those on a stock as well.
I mean, there's some stuff reinvented, like auto wipers and stalks that didn't need to be reinvented. But hey, I mean, the best part is no part, as somebody once said. Hey, look, somebody also said leave them wanting more. And we should do that. We should, because I can see about 600 people tuning in live this week. Let's finish early for a change. As I'm in the top left box doing the hosting, I can make executive decisions. That's a great job, man.
We're gonna promote you to full time.
No chance. It's too much hard work, and I know what people are thinking. Hosting a podcast is neither hard nor work, but trust me, I'm leaving this back up to Dominic next week when he's back, because he's got all the prep and the stories and the writing.
Well, I'm gonna have to watch this episode back and kind of take some notes, because you do it so much better than I do.
Stop it. Thank you to everyone who watched live this week. It means a lot for making a comment. It means a lot as well to hit the thumbs up, because you might think it makes no difference, but you know the way these things work. If you hit the little thumbs up button, it tells YouTube, hey, maybe somebody else would like to watch this, and we'd love to grow the show. Last week's episode had 10,000 viewers, but help us get to 20. Come on, we can do that together. We'd love to get more people tuning in, watching, commenting, building the community of Batteries Included. Thank you very much to everyone who's tuned in this week and watching live. I can see a big, big live audience this week. Thank you so much. If you've left a comment and a thumbs up and taken part in the live chat, remember we have midweek shows as well, where we'll find your battery bargains. If you want to buy a used EV or a new EV, give us your circumstances and we'll find the perfect EV for you. You can email us batterybargains@batteriesincludedpodcast.com. Check out those midweek shows. And as Dominic has been on the road this week, look out for some interviews, maybe one or a two, hopefully coming on the channel, talking about the kind of things he's been doing this week in Abu Dhabi. Look, thank you very much for watching. We appreciate it as always. And we'll catch you on the next one. Ciao.